Hello, everyone. I hope everything is going well. It's Tyler Bryden. It's March 1st, 2019, and I must say, for me at least, no, it's for everyone, I feel like. Everyone I'm talking to, anyways, says this year is just flying by. And it just really has felt like there has just been a serious amount of acceleration in my life and so many people's lives lately. One of the interesting things that my girlfriend and I noticed, and a couple other people have actually mentioned as well too, is that it seems like every sentence is just ending with "that's so crazy" or "that's wild." It, like, no one really knows what to say anymore. Everyone sort of aware that something weird is going on, and you know, obviously there's, you know, some stuff happening in the political climate, but I just think overall we may have hit. We may have hit this level of acceleration that at least seems in a way that obviously the amount of information that's being generated is just so vast now that I think it's just so overwhelming for so many of us. And it's become a little bit cliche to say almost, but when we, you know, when we look back at ourselves not that long ago, we just didn't have to. I don't know, I guess we've always been absorbing so much, you know, so much information at once, but it's through this completely different medium and this digital, this completely instant instant gratification, the quick feedback. There's some, you know, this is a stimulation and a sense and a kind of information that we haven't had to deal with before, and now, you know, through the web, through social media, there has just been this, you know, democratization of the ability to create content. And with that ability and with the population that we have, and you know, partly I think just because of, you know, some of our individualistic drive to want to share things about ourselves, we have a lot and a lot of information. And, you know, in some ways it almost is like garbage, because so much of that information can be completely useless. Now, there are oftentimes amazing, you know, gold nuggets within that information, but where the value of that is lost is having to find it. And, you know, this is what I believe in some ways I've been working on for the last several months at least, is trying to take this ridiculous amount of information and try to distill it into just the most important parts. And by doing that, the, you know, in my example, I guess would be here is a professor's lecture, which many of us have experienced. Some of them were great, some of them weren't, some of them you just had to do. But no one really wants to record a lecture and then go back and listen to the whole 3 hours of it. And we've all had that experience of navigating through content, especially video and audio. I don't know how many times on YouTube you quick click, you know, clicking through trying to find the spot and where he was talking about, but it's really difficult to actually find. And so, you know, what we've been trying to figure out is a system that allows people to like quickly identify what's in their video, what's in their audio, and then what are, you know, I would say even the good parts of their text, so that, you know, we're speeding up the efficiency of understanding what is basically quality content or quality communication. And it's just, it's weird because, you know, I'm coming in to do, you know, just to have a chat and talk through some stuff and share with ever who is listening. And, you know, when I'm doing this, I don't want to be here and talking and like basically talking about my company speak. And, you know, I'm not trying, it's this weird thing when you merge your professional life and really your own personal interests so much. And, where what I'm so fascinated in is now basically what I am building into a platform that I am then trying to sell, which is, it's been such a crazy journey and such an interesting challenge. And I must say, I'm looking in to, where I am at my own life. And, interestingly, I'm listening to this book, and it's Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson. And a lot of people maybe in marketing or know who that guy is. And he's quite a character, and he's quite a successful marketer, and really sort of like an underground known marketer, though, and who has sort of made his life sort of bootstrapping and basically built this really this really like flexible, quick website development system. And I don't even know what we call it a website. It's called ClickFunnels. And so that's his big piece is funnels. And, in most people who have done any marketing or digital marketing or sales, there is the buyer's journey. Some people, different structures of it, but many people are aware of ADA, attention, interest, desire, and action. And, you really need to drive people through a funnel to actually get them to want to purchase something. And so Russell Brunson has, I would say, taken this to the most extreme, but has done a fantastic job with that by basically building a system where you can quickly develop these funnels and really not have too much technical knowledge and actually do it. And I'm really impressed with the way he's articulated things. I'm not a user of ClickFunnels, and I don't know if I would use it, because I actually like building websites, with, either while I'm building, I'm building Node.js software platform right now, but WordPress, I would be much happier to use, I think, anyways. But the point that I'm trying to bring this back to is, is he's talking about how you structure a story and the idea of the hero's journey. And, even within this hero's journey, this idea of there's two sides to it. There's the achievement side that our hero is looking for externally, but there is also the transformation that is happening internally. And he talks about that. It's very, very interesting and well put out, and really makes gives you a couple moments that click in your head when you're listening to it. But it comes down to this little five-part step, basically, you can go through to write a story really quickly. And it's really, really interesting. So the five parts of that story, and he was actually originally taught by apparently a fantastic screenwriter, there's a new opportunity that seems good at first. Then there is a change of plans. And then there's the point of no return. There's a major setback. And that's when there's that big, moment, Guardians of the Galaxy, where it looks like the world is over. Everything's done. They're just never gonna be able to come back from this. It's time to throw that Hail Mary. And then the climax. And then, with the climax, is obviously the biggest obstacle. And, either they win that, you're gonna win that obstacle, you're gonna beat the boss, or you're not gonna beat the boss, but you're gonna have the transformation on the inside. And sometimes that's actually the most important part. And then usually what we see at the end is always that last 10 minutes, 15 minutes in a movie, where it's almost sort of cloudy, and we see our hero's new life. So I thought that was really interesting, and then as a person who maybe takes everything way too seriously, I was listening to that story and that structure of the story, and relating it to my own life, as many people do. And it's so interesting how our brains make meaning, and how, even as I'm listening to him tell the structure of this story, I'm basically molding my own life into those stories. So it's just so interesting, because it almost seems, because you are, obviously you're growing up and you're just constantly living out this own hero's journey over and over again. And so I feel like you know, I've had these 5 points in my own life several times, and, you know, looking at it, then you think, okay, well, I'm probably in one story right now. And so where are you in that story? I'm worried right now. I think I might be at point of no return, working on a new company, have another company, you know, investing money in it, hiring people, taking on some risk. And it's, you know, it's one of those do or die. You have the opportunity to turn back. And then, you know, right now I'm in an accelerator program, and I've, told people what I'm working on, and I'm doing this, and it's like there's no moment to, you know, there's no time to turn back now. And when you look at that, okay, so if I'm at point of no return, what comes next? Major setback. So what is that? It's weird when you, you know, in my experience anyways, like a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners, they're always in sort of this survival mode and always on alert. And you know, I know in my mind, when everything seems to be going right, or almost, I would say, a little too well, you start to get really, really suspicious of what's coming your way. And so I don't know what this will be. It's just, you know, it's power to know, though, you know, in some ways. And if you, you know, at least look, you know, look at life in this way, that, you know, there are challenges coming. There is going to be major setbacks, and there's going to be problems, and you're going to have to solve them. And you're probably going to have to throw maybe a Hail Mary to actually make it through. I feel like a lot of people feel like that right now. You know, that acceleration that we're feeling has led to an urgency, a stress, and anxiety. In some ways that we are, you know, we deserve to have because of the situation we're in, and then some ways that we're putting on ourselves because of this perceived urgency and need and fear. And a lot of that has come through, you know, come through media, a lot of that has come through our childhoods, that a lot of that has come through the current politicians and the current climate that we're in right now. And, you know, it was really interesting. Got to listen to, there was a podcast with Dr. Phil and Joe Rogan, which was quite an interesting combo, not something that people might necessarily expect. But man, it was fascinating. And one of the things that I was just so almost grateful to hear in a way from Dr. Phil was this idea that, you know, he's talking about people who've had their lives broken, whether they've had an affair and they, you know, they caused their family to break up and they feel guilt for that, or whatever that is, and what, you know, they've wrecked their family life or destroyed or lost their job or gotten into prison or something like that. You know, he says you should be depressed. You should be upset. If you're practical, you know that you're not in a good place and you need to do something. And if you don't, you think you're just fine and everything's good, then you have a problem. And I think there's two sides that I see here. One, that a lot of people don't think that they should feel upset, or that we should be depressed, or we should have anxiety. And I know I've been there, and I, you know, in some ways continue to be there. But you also realize how much control you can have over that if you put the effort in and you get the, not, you can't just put the effort in, you have to get the right coping skills, you have to have the right support and guidance. But this idea that we should never feel upset, we should never be angry, that we should never be depressed, is just unrealistic as we are, you know, we're human beings. And part of that, is the system that guides our life, and that's not just going to go away. And we have to deal with the fact that we're going to deal with some emotion, we're going to deal with some hardship, we're going to be upset sometimes. It's like this idea that, you know, we just want to be happy, but happy is not a plateau. Happy is something that can be achieved, but for almost anyone, something that's not sustained permanently. You don't just hit this moment in your life where you hit this beautiful plane of happiness and you just sit there for the rest of your life. I have to think of the external influences. I have to think of the internal influences of in our lives that can come at any time. We never know when the next emergency is coming, when the next family member has a problem, when we lose a best friend. We never know when that's going to come. And I feel like in so many ways, we've been wrongly educated about how we should think about our emotions, how we should think about our behavior, and how we, you know, think we should be, you know, maneuvering through this life that we're in. And now that, you know, that's the one side that we see. But there's also, of course, the opposite, which is there are so many people who don't have the knowledge to understand that there is a problem. And you see, you know, so many people, and a concept that I've talked a lot about is just this, you know, this idea of this blind spot. And everyone just seems to have one. You have to do a lot of digging to understand what that is and actually find it. I like this metaphor of the blind spot, and because everyone has known that feeling of driving and just what happens with that lack of awareness and not taking a look in the mirror and not looking in your blind spot, making a maneuver and, you know, seeing how quickly that damage can be done. I think people are actually quite capable of identifying those blind spots, and maybe you've had a moment in your life when you have had that identified by either yourself or someone else. And I know a lot of times the blind spot is discovered by someone else. And I'll give an example, and it was a horrible example. But when I was in university, a good buddy of mine, he would laugh and then he would hit his hand against someone's leg as he did it. It was just this really sort of funny twitch that he did. And I don't think he was really ever aware of it. And eventually we got laughing and sort of doing it behind his back. And one day my buddy and I was, and again, this was horrible. We laughed and then we're doing that to, you know, we were doing that to each other. And he picked up on the fact that we were sort of teasing him. And really after that point, we didn't see him doing that anymore. And it's a, you know, a sad sort of example, and you know, apologies to you, my good friend, but it took someone else's, you know, he had to see a reflection of it and understand that it was, you know, he just hadn't seen himself, he hadn't perceived himself doing that, and so he had never thought of anything of it. And there's lots of these, you know, every single person has one of these. And the example I've had is that I talk too fast, and I still do it. I guess it's not as much of a blind spot anymore, but just because you understand that there's a blind spot there doesn't mean that you're always active about managing it. And so I have to be really conscious and aware that I talk too fast, and I can really, really quickly forget that I'm doing it, and I can just completely delve into just talking too quick, or basically what I'm doing right now, just blabbing on. And so maybe there's things in your life that, you know, you realize, wow, there's a weakness here, there's something that I'm just not thinking about, or maybe someone else has identified that for you. The point is that so many of us don't really have the ability to look inside ourselves and understand what's going wrong. And so many of us have either sort of, I don't know, I would almost say like dwelled on the surface level and not dug too deep into your own conscious and subconscious and trying to really get at the root of why you're making decisions and behaving the way you do. Some people numb with drugs and alcohol, and other people just don't want to deal with that. But there needs to be this balance here, because I think both sides are causing problems for themselves, and they're also causing problems for each other. And to bring this back to Dr. Phil, he just did such a fantastic job at sort of laying that out and articulating that we're sort of responsible and accountable for our own actions, and he's preached that for a long time. And that both, you know, in so many ways frees you, but then also causes distress because, you know, you have to realize that your life is in your own hands. And for so many people, that's a really hard thing to understand. I didn't understand that because I felt so overwhelmed with external influences, and in so many cases I still do, you know, especially trying to build a company and seeing monopolies and, you know, competition with companies with millions or hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in capital. And so there's a need to be aware of the external influences and the impact it can have on you. But there's so much accountability that we can have. And in so many ways, I feel like we don't believe in ourselves in the right way. We don't understand what we're fully capable of. And I hope one day that we can all get the confidence and the support and the feedback that we need, that we do feel like we are in control of our own lives. It's a bit different today because I've actually recorded this with Audacity. And so I've had a couple chances to pause and listen back. And it's been sort of odd doing it this way because there's these trade-offs, because I like talking all one conversation fluidly through, but maybe it's the concussions, whatever's happened to me in my life, it stopped me from really following a really good train of thought as I'm going along, and oftentimes I'm sort of forgetting about what I'm saying and really just talking out my butt because I'm like, wow, I don't even know what topic I'm actually talking about right now. And so it was really sort of nice to actually be able to pause as soon as that happened and go back a sec and say, okay, let's try that again. However, as you record a little bit longer, you sort of almost forget what your original point was. And then it's that same thing, having to go back through the information and try to find that original point that got you to the sub point that brought you to this weird tangent that I am currently on right now. It's also taken a lot more time. It's a lot easier when you just sort of blab and talk on the whole time. And I didn't actually stop that many times, but it definitely chops up the flow and adds more time to actually recording this. And when you're doing it, you also realize how many weird noises you actually make. So I'm unsure how I feel. I'll probably continue to do versions of both. And I apologize for anyone who actually does like listening to this for the delay. It's been quite a while since I've done my last one. I've just been so goddamn busy. And that's a horrible excuse. It really is, because you just have to put in the time, the effort, and the mental capacity to do it. So I'm making an excuse right now. But things have been moving pretty quick. I've been really diving deep into what I'm doing and have a lot of responsibilities and stuff going on. And I want to make sure that I'm doing that right. This podcast is a really important part of what I'm doing, and I can't abandon it, and I don't want to, because I hope this is something that I can continue to do to connect with others. I hope to bring people on. I hope to actually do an official speak podcast. And I just think this is a core foundation of my life. And so I'm a little bit sad that I've taken so long to do this. I'm going to try to continue, and I've had a lot of fun here today. So I hope you have enjoyed this as much as I have. A lot of stuff I want to talk about. I'm talking so much lately. You really realize when you get into meetings all the time, and you're meeting, and especially I'm doing lots of, you know, networking, talking, and showing people what I'm working on and all this stuff. It takes a toll. Like I don't know. I had a couple people, in a way, say that I'm an introvert, which is an odd thing. And I think a lot of people think that they're an extrovert, but maybe an introvert. I think a lot of things about a lot of people, but this is one of my theories. Is it, you know, some people get energy from being with people, and I do. I get energy from being with people. But then there's a certain extent where it exhausts me as well, too. And running around and doing all these meetings is also just lowers your productivity. Sometimes you just don't feel like you're getting work done. I'm really excited because I'm in a better spot now where I have a great team that I'm relying on who are helping out, and it doesn't necessarily feel like, you know, even though I'm in a meeting and I'm making progress, it's not, you know, it's like the application isn't being built or there's other progress going on as well too, which is really, really exciting. But I know a lot of people just constantly have meetings and don't necessarily get that opportunity, and that would stress me out. So as that continues, and I feel like maybe unfortunately it will for the rest of my life, I'm going to really try to explore how you can be in meetings all day and be in conversations all day, not suffer the consequences of being exhausted by them and still getting the work and productivity done you need. It's going to be a challenge. But we're going to work through it together. I'm going to share those insights along the way. And hopefully you guys maybe have some insights for me as well, too. It's a weird world we're living in when there's so much competition. And I saw, you know, a stark example of that today with a good friend of mine who has a company and has been getting basically poor online reviews from a competitor. And I understand that with the system that we're in, the world we live in, there's competition. And there needs to be some competition in the world. There needs to be some competitiveness. But in a time like this, we really need to focus on collaboration, on supporting each other. And I'm hoping that we can all sort of continue to work on the small little pieces that we're working on ourselves, and in this way contribute to this mass consciousness that can be accessed, of course, at any time, that when a person comes across an obstacle or they have an epiphany, they can search and they can find. And this need for collaboration, this need for us to investigate those questions, find out what makes, you know, some people happy and successful and other people, you know, what makes them great speakers, what makes other people amazing physical athletes. These things that are here for us to explore and find out and share with each other. And so we can all benefit each other. And if we all get better together, then there maybe isn't a need in this way for so much competition. And so as I move forward with what I'm doing and enter a realm where there is some competition and some people who are deeply entrenched in delivering value for their shareholders, their big companies with thousands and thousands of people and all relying on the success of them, and you can understand why it gets competitive so quickly. This is part of that thing, that self-preservation. This is survival out here for so many people. And if a competitor can enter the market and disrupt you, it's not just, okay, welcome into the market and you can, you know, we can all share a little bit. That could take away from you to the point that you have to fire people, that you have to lose, you know, people lose jobs. Their lives can be ruined because of competition in some ways. And although, I see this need to do this in this current system that we're in, it seems like there's a better structure that we can have to that. And when I bring that up, one thing that this reminds me of is a person who is actually running for president right now. And I'm going to actually pull this up because I'm sitting by my computer just to make sure I've got this right. It's Andrew Yang. And very, very fascinated with what he's doing here. He is running for president in the United States. He's running for a Democrat. He is focused very significantly on universal basic income. And most people, when they are speaking about issue like that, they're immediately, pushed towards being a Democrat, of course, but, you know, even towards that socialist label. And he has not gotten the same pushback, and the reason is he's he's deeply knowledgeable about technology and the impact that it's having right now and the impact that it's going to have in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, the future of our whole human race here. And what he's realized here that in these four swing key states down in the United States elections, the correlation was between mass automation and people losing jobs and the current president being voted in. And actually, to bring it back to Russell Brunson, an interesting thing he said was that Donald Trump, when he was doing his campaign, actually spoke at about a grade 3 level while he was telling his stories, while a comparable candidate like Ted Cruz actually spoke at about a grade 9 level. And so when people who a lot of times have that maybe low skill labor force and then get laid off by automation, the person who's telling the simplest story and who emotionally appeals for you and you, who is making you feel better about the pain that you have, it can be an easy choice. And that's, you know, that's what happened in some of these swing states and for many of the people who voted. And Andrew Yang has identified that, and he's a little bit younger of a guy. He comes from a nonprofit background, and so he was helping people who had actually had the impact of being laid off through technology or something, and so it was his job to actually train them, help them find new opportunities. But he just seems down to earth. Sky the smart. You can always be worried that there's something else going on, but overall, after watching him and where a lot of people got a big look at him is on the actual on the Joe Rogan podcast again. And I'm pulling that up right now. It's still only at about 2 million views, but I was just really, really impressed to see a lot of people who are on the right side who are really impressed with him and don't look at the fact that even that he's running as a Democrat is a bad thing. So it's been really interesting to see the interest on both sides. A lot of people donating who have not donated before. He is on his way to trying to raise $65,000, which then gives him access to the debates. I hope he gets it. Right now I'm looking at it. It says he has $37,000 and he's got to get up to $65,000 in donation. I don't know if I can donate as a Canadian, but I would, because to me, this is the kind of people that we need to see in charge with technical knowledge, understanding of what's going on in especially some of these large tech companies and just the infrastructure of the world we're living in right now. I think that's really important. We also need someone who is cognizant of the changes that are going to come in the next 10, 15 years. And that's something that he's running on very significantly. He has talked about even not really wanting to run for president in some regards. It's the fact that he is so desperate to get out this message that he knows by doing this that at least he can try to bring this message into the mainstream. And so I wish him luck. It's scary. And when you listen to that conversation on Joe Rogan, there's some chilling moments talking about what might look like when more automation, for example, automation of trucks and what is the reaction of truck drivers going to be. And Joe was actually a bit skeptical in saying, I don't think it's going to be that bad. And what Andrew, quickly responded with was just like, look at what happened in Europe with the Uber drivers. And if you don't remember that, it was like riots and people dropping cement blocks on cars on Ubers just because they were driving Ubers. It got really out of control really quickly. And that's what happens when self-preservation kicks in, when primal survival mode kicks in, when your way of life is threatened and the way you make a living is threatened. And it's going to have a big effect on the world. I don't know the numbers that he said specifically, but in not that long, they believe about 40% of the workforce will not have a need for jobs. They will be laid off by automation and artificial intelligence. When you look at the people who are losing these jobs, a lot of, fortunately, that hatred and anger and resentment has been directed towards immigrants, but it is technology. And one thing that Andrew Yang was very clear about in this podcast, and what I've consistently seen from business people I talk to and even in myself is we're going to go. We're going to keep going. We're going to automate this stuff. We're going to keep building and keep trying to get rid of these inefficient things. We're keep going to try to make this system better. And there's going to be people who lose jobs because of it. There are things that are happening right now that are unneeded, unnecessary, ineffective, resource intense when they don't need to be, costly. There's people who, you know, organizations who have 10 people doing a job that one person doesn't even need to do. And that's a pretty scary thing. I've seen even with small implementations that I've done in my own life and for clients, basically that we've eliminated the need for a lot of things, whether that's automation of accounting information when someone orders on e-commerce, or automated email games or email campaigns with personalization based off triggers, where no one needs to send these things out manually anymore. The difference that can be made if you integrate technology, automation, and some AI into your workflow and into your organization can be truly, truly game-changing. And I don't know what exactly happened in my life, but I've been so drawn to tech for so long that I've paid attention and watched as this has sort of come for so long and really made steps in my life to try to be as technically savvy as I can for this concussed up brain that I have. And so I hope at least that I'm preparing for the future. And again, we need people like Andrew Yang here who are going to prepare us for that and bring awareness to this, because it's going to be pretty shocking when some of these changes come and we don't know when they're going to come. We look at technology, we see many multiple things progressing at once, and we don't really know when those are going to converge at once to make a really big disruptive force. And we've seen just how quickly things can change. One year no iPhones to the next year having iPhones in existence. Look at the way that that's changed the world. Look at the way that's changed people and behavior so quickly, and something that we just did not expect coming. So what is going to come with this stuff as well too, especially with the drive to do this, the drive for efficiency, this capitalist system that we're in, to continuously innovate, to make more money, to grow, and do that relentlessly through technology. So if you're interested in that, take a look and check into his message, because it was really, really interesting and important. So just something that I've seen and wanted to bring up as well too. And I've been talking on for quite a while now here. It is 37 minutes. I think you probably maybe thought I was going to shut down a little earlier, flipped it back, and I still had some stuff to talk about. But I've been doing this for quite a bit here, and I know I've got some things on the way. So is there anything I want to leave you with? I want you to be excited. I'm excited. Even though this world is being crazy and chaotic sometimes, there's some really awesome things going on. I hope you find something that you feel that way about. I'm really so happy and proud that I have. I'm continuing to push every day. And when you find this path to these things you love, take it. Do whatever you can. You know, look at that hero's journey and see that there's maybe not that many times that you're going to get those opportunities. And even if there's a chance you might fail, even if there's a chance it's not going to work out, that inner transformation can be completely worth it. So, dream crazy. Love yourself. Keep pushing. And live your hero's journey.